Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week, as the Hoosier Ag Today news team brings you the top news stories impacting Indiana's farmers and the state's ag industry from this past week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and coming up, we'll bring you an update on how corn and soybean crops are looking across the state. You'll hear from Levi Riggs, who not only owns Riggs Ag Solutions based in Danville, but he's also a country music artist, and he's performing this Sunday night at the Montgomery County Fair. Also, Brian Basting with Advanced Trading will join us here shortly as he takes a deeper dive into the USDA's WASDE report released Friday at noon and how that report impacted the grain markets to close out the week. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has your Indiana farm forecast. Plus, you'll hear the story of Indiana's Pickletown. Max Troyer is the owner of Seckler's Pickles in St. Joe, Indiana, in DeKalb County, which is also home to next weekend's St. Joe Pickle Festival. Max will share the 100-year history of Seckler's Pickles coming up. But first, more and more farmers are being sought out by solar energy companies looking to lease their farmland. And those offers that farmers are getting are pretty high. Eric Pfeiffer joins us with more.
Yeah, CJ, they're getting up there. Let me explain. The Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer surveys 400 U.S. ag producers each month. For the past several months, the survey has asked farmers if they've been actively engaged in discussions with any companies about leasing farmland they own for the installation of a solar energy project to generate electricity. April and May saw slightly higher yes responses, but June had 16% of respondents say yes.
And one out of four, approximately 27%, said they were offered $1,500 per acre or more.
That's Dr. Jim Minter, director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture and principal investigator of the survey. He says 69% of those were offered over $1,000.
That surprised me. I knew enough to know that there were some people being offered rates above $1,500 because we'd heard about it. I didn't expect it to be.
No, I didn't think it'd be 27%. And just to remind those that are not as familiar with the rental market as other people, this is several multiples of cash rent.
And there at the end, that was Dr. Michael Langemeyer, Associate Director of the Center for Commercial Ag, who joins Mentert on the Purdue Commercial AgCast to discuss the results of the Ag Economy Barometer. They knew this solar topic was a hot one in Indiana, but
the nationwide aspect of this has kind of got me a little bit befuddled. And I think one of the issues for us is we don't have a good grip on how many acres have been contracted, for example, here in Indiana or the Eastern Corn Belt. We know that there's quite a few acres that are under contract where no activity's taken place. We don't have a good grip on how many acres are actually under contract. So this is suggesting there's quite a bit of activity under the surface that we're not seeing.
Yeah, rather substantial.
Yeah. That you can't pick up by visual traveling around the country.
Tune into the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, or you can find it by finding this story at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
How are the EPA's regulations harming the ag industry? Well, that's what the House Ag Committee wanted to find out during a hearing Wednesday on Capitol Hill. Sabrina Halverson has more.
What producers should not have to worry about is the federal government working against them.
In his opening statement, Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson pointed out the environmental stewardship of farmers.
American farmers and ranchers are the original conservationists. No one cares more for the environment than those whose livelihoods depend on it.
He also pointed out recent actions that pit the EPA against agriculture.
Last summer, the EPA published the draft Vulnerable Species Pilot Program and the draft Herbicide Strategy that will directly impact the ability of producers to utilize these critical tools and will cost billions to comply with. Even this administration's own U.S. Department of Agriculture expressed significant concerns with these actions.
Farmers told the House Agriculture Committee on Wednesday they are concerned the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has been charting a regulatory path for the industry largely without their input.
Government agencies like EPA shouldn't be putting unnecessary burdens on struggling farmers like us.
Hog and poultry producer Gary Cooper of Ohio testified on behalf of the National Pork Producers Council.
We are very concerned about EPA's ELGs for meat and poultry processors. Even if EPA admits this rule will cause many processors to close, it is frustrating that the government would propose regulations putting large numbers of meat processors out of the business. Their closure means the loss of marketing opportunities for farmers, undermining both Congress and USDA's efforts to expand the number of small and medium local meat processors.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
And John Deere plans to build a 1.2 million square foot warehouse and distribution center in northwestern Indiana near Lowell in Lake County. The company bought 234 acres near I-65 and State Road 2, with plans for the facility to be longer on its side than the building once known as the Sears Tower in Chicago, which is more than 1,400 feet tall. The announcement comes less than a week after John Deere announced it would be laying off more than 600 workers across the Midwest. Read the full story at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. It's time now for Hoosier Ag Today's Farm Market Review, and for that, here's Andy Eubank.
Thank you, CJ. Good to be with you. It was a USDA July supply and demand update at noon Eastern time on Friday, and we begin with analysis of that report. I checked in near the end of trade with Brian Basting at Advanced Trading. Brian, we had a comeback after the USDA noon Eastern time report on Friday in the corn and soybean markets. Everything was selling off prior to the report. Wheat continued weak afterwards, but we had some surprises. Talk about those.
Well, there's always surprises, Andy, and I appreciate you having me as always. This is a report that had gone in, as you said, with a very bearish leaning toward it. We've had just really good moisture here across some dry areas of the Midwest this week. And hopes rising that they'll stabilize some crop condition ratings in the east. And it dried out in the west, which is just what the doctor ordered. But we'd gone into this report with such a bearish bias that perhaps we're seeing some end users sneak in here, Andy. A little bit of a surprise in the carryout estimate for old crop corn, for example. The USDA did come in here today and increased old crop. This is the crop you're wrapping up now. Usage by 150 million bushel. They took exports up 150. And a little bit surprising, they took the feed residual up 75. So 75 higher on exports for old crop, 75 higher for feed residual for 150 million bushel increase in usage. So that took our carryout down to 1877. And I'd remind your listeners that going into the report, the trade was looking for old crop corn carryout 2047. So that's about 170 million bushels below the average trade estimate. So that was the bullish surprise, Andy, and I think it just encouraged some end users to come in here with corn futures below $4 in September to get some coverage on. We'll wait and see if there's some follow-through or not. We expect the crop condition ratings to improve next week. But beans, not a lot of surprise in beans, Andy, and as a result, we're seeing kind of unchanged, choppy action in beans at the moment. Wheat was the one that was really pummeled today. The surprise there was the much larger than expected spring wheat crop. This is the first survey-based spring wheat estimate that the USDA published, and some record yields penciled in for North Dakota. Obviously, that crop is not made yet, but USDA is quite optimistic there and really pummeled the wheat market down here and looking at some increases in carryout relative to a year ago, and only a slight increase in usage, 10 million bushels in feed and 25 million bushels in exports, but seeing carryout projected for all wheat at 856 compared to 702 last year. So biggest surprise, I'd say, today, Andy, was the wheat production number being much above expectations, and then the corn, old crop corn carryout, as it were, lower than expectations.
Brian Basting there, economist at Advanced Trading, and his number is 309-664-2314. Now settlements from Friday trade. September corn ends at 402, up a penny and three quarters. Dece goes to 414 and three quarters, up 4 cents. March, 428, a gain of three and three quarters. Soybeans down 12 on the August, 1105. September, 1058 and a half, a nickel and a quarter lower. And November, 1065 and a quarter, 2.5 down. Leading the way lower all day long, wheat. September ends at 550 and three quarters, down 20.5 cents. And the meats higher. August live cattle, 182.37, up 12 cents. August lean hogs, 88.45, up 177. That's the market wrap. I'm Andy Eubank. Much more still to come on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Podcasts are everywhere today. But how do you find the one that has something you're really interested in? The Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network is your one-stop shop for podcasts covering Indiana agriculture. Farm policy, farm news, agronomy, soil health, ag biosciences, and more can all be found at the Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network. Check it out on the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app and at HoosierAgToday.com.
The weekend is starting dry, but we get very unsettled very quickly. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. Let's take a look at your forecast update here. Here's what's going on. We are looking at just a calm, tranquil Saturday for the most part. No precipitation threats through the day here on Saturday. Everything is farther off to our north and northwest. But that's the thing. Watch the upper Midwest closely here today and tomorrow. We're seeing multiple rounds of shower and thunderstorm activity come together. And the one that really forms here later this afternoon and evening will be one that we need to watch for Sunday. That moisture is going to be moving across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and eventually interacting with the Great Lakes. I think it triggers a shower and thunderstorm action in Indiana as we move very early into the Sunday time frame, and we'll end up with about 60% coverage of a rain and thunderstorm activity for Sunday here. It's going to be impressive what we can put together. This system has really blossomed in the past day and a half or so with what potential it has. This leads us into what is going to be and has been advertised as a very unsettled weather forecast picture for the first part of this coming week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday all have chances of shower and thunderstorm activity on a daily basis, probably 60 to 70% coverage, but over the 3 days combined, everybody will see rain, and I think everybody will see rain at least at two different times. Combined, that's going to put down 0.5 to 1.5 inches at least of precipitation, and I'm getting to be a little bit more concerned about some stronger to severe thunderstorm activity that may pop up in here on a day or two, and that could push totals a little bit heavier to 2 inches or more in parts of the state. The biggest rains are central and north, but I'm not going to let the south get off without anything. I think the south can pick up some of those totals very easily as well. So unsettled for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But Wednesday, as the moisture finishes, that's because there's a frontal boundary slowly sagging southward out of Canada and across the Great Lakes. That is going to come down through, give us a dry finish to the week for Thursday and Friday. Significantly cooler and significantly less humid. Very comfortable weather conditions here as we finish out the week Thursday, Friday. And then we go into the weekend and we keep those. Maybe temperatures are up a little bit, but we're still seeing very nice airflow in terms of humidity values. It's not going to be uncomfortable at all for the weekend. Brewing off to the west and southwest, though, over the Four Corners area, the desert southwest, there is another surge of warm air coming. We're seeing that push into the Great Plains likely next weekend. And then as we move forward into the week of the 22nd, that warmer air is going to push in here. Humidity values climb, and that probably re-triggers some instability. Don't be fooled. After the big rains that we saw last week, we are going to be seeing potential for nice rounds of moisture once again Sunday through next Wednesday. I'm Ryan Martin.
Farmers and agriculture dealers, now is the time to inspect your combines for holes and wear in your threshing, feeder, and grain tank sections. Instead of costly replacements, try combine wear parts from Eiley Fabrications. Many liners rivet or plug weld on top of the OEM, simply covering the wear. But Eiley steel wear part liners are made with the best steel, are easy to install, and built to OEM specs to ensure a snug and seamless fit. Visit IHLEFabrications.com and elevate your harvest this season. Welcome back. I'm Andy Eubank on Hoosier Ag This Week with a crop update.
I've always been a wanderer. I settled down, never quite settled down.
That is Levi Riggs, country music artist from Indiana. He's performing Sunday night at the Montgomery County Fair with other performances around the state this summer, and details on that at LeviRiggs.com. Levi also runs Riggs Ag Solutions and has our West Central Indiana crop update. He told me a couple of days ago the 67% good to excellent corn crop and 66% good to excellent soybean crop is about right for his area.
I think in my geographical area here in West Central Indiana, Henderson County, Boone, Putnam, you know, our crops look really pretty good. We got planted early and on time with not a lot of replant. So I feel like maybe we're a little bit better than most, but I'd say that that's probably accurate.
Riggs is a Channel Seed Pro, and he told Hat in the new Channel Seeds growing season update that a lot of corn is shorter this year with the early heat, but also tar spot has come about 2 weeks early.
Yeah, with tar spot, you know, this humid, wet conditions that we may find ourselves in, it could proliferate into something bigger. So definitely be looking at that. Consider a shot of Dallaro Complete on that to deal with tar spot and northern corn leaf blight and gray leaf spot. It's also great on frog eye. But I think that's the big thing right now is, you know, tar spot can be nothing. And we've been fortunate for it to come in late after a lot of grain fill late in the season in previous years. But just the fact that it's here so much earlier is a little bit more worrisome.
He says the ideal application timing is
right at full tassel is the best time to hit it. If you use a little bit higher rate, you can buy yourself about another week to 10 days of efficacy, which, you know, timing with tar spot is the tricky part.
Riggs is optimistic that yield results come harvest can be very good in a year that has benefited from good planting conditions and rainfall. The complete Levi Riggs interview is at HoosierAgToday.com and our free mobile app. Now over to someone unlike Levi who cannot carry a tune in a bucket, CJ Miller.
Well, Andy, I do like to sing solo. Solo, you can't hear me. Well, enough of my bad jokes as we turn our attention now to an event that's coming up that likely won't be featuring any singing. Eric Pfeiffer has more now on that event, which is sponsored by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance's Membership and Policy Committee.
Their annual Indiana Ag Policy Summit is coming to the Hamilton County Fairgrounds in Noblesville Wednesday, July 31st. I'm fortunate enough to be the MC for the event again this year, but don't worry, there will be much smarter people there that will do most of the talking. Steve Howell, Senior Director of Industry Affairs for the Corn and Soy Policy Groups, explains.
Really excited that former Ag Secretary Mike Johann's going to be joining us. He's a former senator, former governor of Nebraska, also former Ag Secretary under George W. Bush.
Johann's will discuss the status of the Farm Bill, among other topics. Kyle Kunkler from the American Soybean Association will also be on hand to lead a discussion on the EPA's herbicide strategy to comply with the Endangered Species Act, affecting what pesticides farmers can use in certain areas of the state. In addition to policy discussion, Hal says they've added a technology showcase to this year's event.
It's not a trade show, but a showcase just to see some new technology, something of interest to farmers, not a high-pressure sales thing, but take a look at some new technology that we see coming.
After the policy summit, several shop talks are being set up around the state for farmers to get a chance to meet with legislators. Indiana Soybean Alliance Chairman Kevin Cox on the importance of showing up and sharing the difficulties you're facing on the farm.
Understanding those challenges, being able to convey that to the legislator, they understand whenever it's a personal story that you're able to share with them. So the value of that. So we can get people to come out that are producers, that are members, to come out to these, participate in these shop talks, tell their story. That's what counts.
For more info on these events and the membership appreciation night they're having on July 30th, visit incornandsoy.org/events. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, if you're a woodland owner, you may be thinking about harvesting some of your timber to bring in some extra income. But there are several things to consider before you do.
Well, you first need to know what you have in your woods and whether or not it is biologically and or economically mature.
And that's Perry Seitzinger. He's a consulting forester and owner of Seitzinger Forestry based in Putnam County. He recommends reaching out to a DNR district forester or hiring someone like himself to help you out.
The first step in selling timber is getting those trees marked. It's important to know what your goals and objectives are. Many of my clients don't know, and that's why they hire me. And once we figure out what the goals and objectives are, I can mark those trees and advertise them for sale for you.
He also says you should have a legal agreement in place with your logging company before they begin.
First off, you always want to have a written timber sale contract that protects your interests, protects your property, spells out how your land is to be treated during the harvest and once the harvest is complete and what condition the property is to be left in. Not only that, it spells out the terms of the sale, such as the purchase price, the length of the contract, and the payment terms.
Once the contract is in place, Seitzinger recommends hiring someone to monitor the logging process.
Somebody like myself, a consulting forester that can come out, make sure that your property is being treated correctly, the timber is being harvested in a way that it protects your residual trees, and this way your woods is in good shape for the next timber harvest.
You can hear much more from consulting forester Perry Seitzinger in our full conversation. That's at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, coming up on Hoosier Ag this week, you'll hear the story of Seckler's Pickles in St. Joe, Indiana. That's in DeKalb County in northeastern Indiana. You'll hear how the company got its start and how it also inspired the annual St. Joe Pickle Festival, which is coming up next weekend. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
When you think of that broad aperture, where is the greatest opportunity to make a change, this 4G future, a reality?
My own bias and interest is in the farm. Upstream farm management, and actually the statistics that I saw about a month ago in terms of where the ag investment dollars are going bears support to my point of view. There is a bigger decline in downstream investment relative to upstream investments. So I think overall, in the US at least, we are more focused on upstream farm management.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. And of course, you know that Indiana is well known for growing corn and soybeans, as well as raising beef and pork. Also known for watermelons, tomatoes, and pumpkins, but you may not know that Indiana, or at least northeastern Indiana, is also known for pickles. And that's because of a small company based out of DeKalb County called Seckler's Pickles. The nearby town is St. Joe, Indiana, and they'll be hosting their annual St. Joe Pickle Festival coming up next weekend. I'll tell you more about that coming up. But first, joining us here on Hoosier Ag Today is Max Troyer. He's the owner of Seckler's Pickles. And Max, tell us how the company first got its start.
Yeah, so Seckler's Pickles, the Seckler family, they would purchase pickles and usually along railroad stations. So the people would transport the pickles in the 20s. They would grade them, and then they had tanks at the pickle station near the railroad, and they would preserve them in these tanks through a fermentation. And then throughout the year, trains would come and pick them up and take them to companies for processing. Well, during the Depression, the company that they were selling pickles to went bankrupt. So mother of necessity, they had to figure out what to do with all the pickles they had in tanks, and so they started processing them themselves. And so that's kind of where the company started from. And we're a smaller niche company. We've always used granulated sugar and natural colors in our products. It definitely gives a different flavor profile than high fructose corn syrup. Over the years, we kind of called ourselves the Ben and Jerry's of the pickle business. The buzzwords that they're using today are stuff that we've lived by for 100 years. You know, if we could make them faster, but we couldn't make them better.
And Max, I understand the company, it dates back to 1921. You mentioned how the Seckler story started with Ralph Seckler. And by the way, the name is spelled S-E-C-H-L-E-R. That Ralph started the company. His son Frank took it over in 1948. I'm curious when you entered the picture, Max.
I came in the 90s as their general manager. Dave Seckler, the third generation, had just taken over the company, and I kind of partnered with him to move the company forward. And then when he decided to retire, move on, he didn't have any family members that had a great interest in the business. And so that was my opportunity to carry on the stewardship of the company.
Chatting with Max Troyer, he is the owner and president of Seckler's Pickles, based in DeKalb County in northeastern Indiana. And in terms of how much Seckler's Pickles means to your community in DeKalb County, You have the St. Joe Pickle Festival, which is fast approaching here, Max.
We're not the biggest industry in our community, but we are maybe the most well-known. And so the Pickle Festival, the community, and it is a community event. It's not Seckler's Pickles that runs it. And we just try to support it in any way that we can to make it successful. But it gives a small community a chance to get together. And like I said, pickles can put a smile on your face.
This year's St. Joe Pickle Festival starts on Thursday, July 18th and runs through the weekend. You also have a week-long set of company tours that folks can be a part of. Is that right, Max?
That's right. And prior to COVID, we did tours all the time. But now we call it Tour Week, and we coincide it with Pickle Festival. The tours will run from 9 a.m. to 11 and 12:30 to 3. And then Saturday during Pickle Festival, it's from 9 a.m. to noon that we do it. But there's a few requirements when you come through our facility. We are an FDA-inspected facility. You'll have to wear a hairnet, and you have to have closed-toed shoes and no tank tops. Those are a couple of the big criteria that we have to be able to go through on the tour. But they'll get to see pickles made and how we do it. We are a little bit smaller company. I mean, we're not real small, but they can get up close and see how things are done.
What's the website to find more information or to place those orders for Seckler's Pickles, Max?
So it's secklerspickles.com. We do run some specials throughout the year, and we do ship to everywhere. And holidays, birthdays, anniversaries, and just a thank you. Several times it'll be, we'll have customers that send them as thank yous or reminders to friends and family and business people.
Once again, Max Troyer, the owner president of Seckler's Pickles, based in DeKalb County. That's St. Joe, Indiana. In fact, the St. Joe Pickle Festival, July 18th, 19th, and 20th. Company tours, July 15th through the 20th at Seckler's Pickles. And you can find all of this and more information at their website, secklerspickles.com. That's S-E-C-H-L-E-R-S, pickles.com. And Max, thank you so much for taking the time to share the story of Seckler's Pickles. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And with that, we come to the finish line of another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any parts of today's show, you can always download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Also, make sure to download the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. It's a free download for iPhone and Android. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.